Lesson number 10. This lesson covers verses 7 through 12 in chapter 5 and deals with the patient man. But the lesson may be studied in the following manner. First, the problems to be endured. Second, the prospect to encourage. Third, the patience to be exercised. Fourth, the pattern for our example. Fifth, the practical exhortation. In this lesson, James refers to his brethren on four occasions. So there is no difficulty in understanding to whom the message is directed. In chapter 1, James has made it perfectly clear that the genuine believer will have his faith put to the test. But in chapter 5, he has specified a particular area of trial. As this age advances, the pressures and problems become more acute, because of the power structure between capital and labor. The employer on the one side is pressed by competition and controls and taxation, while the employee is under pressure from the union and the opinion or vote of the majority, and the Christian who desires to act correctly before God and his fellow man finds himself in a moral traffic jam, hardly knowing which direction to take. This section also makes it clear that the opening verses of the chapter were written for the benefit of the believers, who no doubt were the victims of oppression under the hand of their rich employers. There would be the tendency to complain and protest and even rebel at the treatment received, and one has to pass through the experience of being defrauded in regard to wages to know in some little measure how easy it is to fall into the attitude of desiring judgment upon the oppressor. Now, James has advocated that genuine belief will always prove itself by genuine behavior. And if this was necessary during the first generation of Christians, we must accept this as an abiding principle, and therefore extremely relevant to 20th century conditions. If it is difficult for the wealthy employer to maintain an honest business and keep a good Christian testimony, it is equally difficult for the Christian employee to suffer injustices and yet maintain a balanced testimony with his employer and his fellow employees. Now, one of the problems that the Christian must face is this: what is his role in the midst of a society where there are obvious social injustices? If he is the victim, should he fight for his rights or suffer in silence? If he is not the victim, but is aware of others being victimized and discriminated against, should he enter the political war and endeavor to change the social conditions and the working agreements in industry with a view to making the world a better place? Many well-meaning Christian people have been led astray on this very issue and have found themselves spending endless hours and energy at a thankless task and seeing no visible benefits from all their labor. Now, as the believer stands facing such problems, his thoughts confused because of his inability to reform the world and yet convinced that something should be done, and that these conditions cannot go on indefinitely. It is right here where the message of James meets the need and sets before us a prospect to encourage, and that prospect is the coming of the Lord. While James does not enter into a doctrinal exposition of this great truth relative to the second advent, nevertheless he sets the truth before us as an accepted fact and applies it in a practical way to everyday Christianity, with a special message for the distressed or distracted believer. In so doing, it will be found that James is in perfect agreement with all the other writers of the New Testament. Unfortunately, this prospect of the return of the Lord has been so distorted by certain schools of theology that the encouragement which it should bring to the Christians has been almost lost, and many of God's dear children will not even study or discuss this great prospect, which is the hope of the believer, and so they lose the encouragement that such a truth is meant to give. By carefully studying this truth as it is revealed in the New Testament, one will arrive at the conclusion that the Lord must return to this earth in order to keep his promises, for he did promise to come again. He must return in order to fulfill the prophecies, and he must return in order to complete his purposes. God has purposes for the church and for Israel as a nation and for the Gentile nations. However, the important matter in this lesson is to understand the practical implications of such a tremendous truth and how it should affect each believer, especially when passing through times of trial, according to the teaching of the Lord himself. The prospect of his return should affect our feet. Go ye out to meet him. Then our hands, occupy till I come. Then our eyes, watch therefore. Then our hearts, let not your heart be troubled. In practical application, this truth of the Lord's return will encourage me in my walk and my work and in watching and take away all my worry. Each of the writers of the New Testament are very careful to apply this truth to practical Christian living, and Paul would have us walk as children of the day. That is, we should be prepared. While Peter outlines the startling events at the end time, but calms our hearts and tells us to make sure that when the Lord returns, we shall be found in peace. John instructs us that everyone who has this hope will live a life of purity. James agrees with these sentiments and says, in effect, keep yourselves calm and be patient or long-suffering unto the coming of the Lord. Having set before us such a great prospect, calculated to bring encouragement in the midst of much trial, James presses another important factor and shows that it will be necessary to exercise long patience. While we are still here in the body, we are subject to human imperfections, and there is always the tendency to take things into our own hands and endeavor to short-circuit the plans and workings of God. In plain words, we are in a hurry to have things done according to our way of thinking. But James instructs us that God's way is the best way, and we are not to give way to quick action or passion, but keep ourselves under control and exercise this patience, which is a long holding out of the mind. When Moses beheld the sufferings of his brethren down in Egypt, he decided that something should be done to relieve their burden. But unfortunately, he didn't wait God's time and placed himself in jeopardy by his own rash behavior, and God had to teach him for 40 years before that Moses learned to be long-suffering. Now, in connection with this exercise of patience, James directs our attention to the farmer and reminds us that the expectation of the farmer is that he might be a partaker of the fruit of the earth. However, God has put certain principles into operation before that fruit can be produced and enjoyed. The farmer must wait for the early rains before he ploughs and sows, and then for the latter rains before he reaps the harvest, so that throughout each succeeding season the farmer must exercise much patience and wait for the working of divine principles in order to enjoy the fruit in the time of harvest. From the example of the farmer, we should learn the lesson that God expects us to labor on, even when we are faced with great difficulties and things seem to go wrong. Remember, the farmer must wait God's time, and so must we. It seems a long time since God announced that the serpent would be crushed and defeated, but that prediction will yet be carried into effect. It is now over 1900 years since the Lord announced that he would return again. But we should ever keep in remembrance that God is not in a hurry, but is long-suffering. Therefore, we who profess to be waiting for the return of the Lord should also display this same long patience. The farmer may have sweat and tears and disappointments during the working days, but there is rejoicing and thanksgiving at the time of harvest. Therefore, James says, don't you be slipping from the path of faith and hope, but get your feet planted with steadfastness. Keep your heart well established, because the coming of the Lord draweth nigh, and when he comes, everything will be properly evaluated and adjusted. In case the Christians in James's day should think that they were passing through some kind of exclusive experience and being called upon to express patience beyond the normal call of duty, James reminds them of the prophets. And it should be borne in mind that these prophets were raised up by God in order to preach the message of God at a time when things were evil, and the people respected not the principles of God. However, even although these prophets spoke in the name of the Lord, they were rejected and despised, and their ministry refused by the majority of the people. Now, says James, did they suffer affliction? And did they exercise long patience? And you count them happy that endured. If these things be so, then you are in the line of a goodly succession, and you also can commit your way unto the Lord. Now James brings into focus one outstanding character from the Old Testament as a pattern for our example of one who endured great affliction and was sustained till he saw the end of the Lord. Job was a man who passed through a great variety of severe trials, and no one seemed to understand why. He lost all of his material possessions at the hands of his enemies, which meant for him the great trial of distress. Then suddenly, without any warning, he lost all his children, sons and daughters, in a disaster. This was the trial of death, when bereavement can rend the heart. Then Job lost his health and passed through the trial of suffering with disease. Added to these was the trial of disappointment when his wife and his supposed friends suggested he was hiding some secret sin. Job was left all alone in the midst of his misery and suffering, but he committed his way unto the Lord, and endured, and in the end he was better off than he had been in the beginning. Now the interesting thing in his life and experience was the battle that was being fought behind the scenes, when Satan was seeking to overthrow the faith of Job. But God had everything under control, and Job endured and came out triumphant. Now, says James, take this man for an example, and he gives us a practical exhortation. Passing through bitter trials has a tendency to lead a man into the use of strong language, and using oaths which may be meaningless. Swearing is a senseless habit, because it does not give emphasis to the thing uttered, and does not raise the speaker in the estimation of the hearer. We are more susceptible to using strong language when we are being oppressed. But James exhorts us not to fall into this error, but keep our language simple and to the point, so that we will not sin with our lips, but just let your answer be a simple yes or no. Amen.